AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
The Volume.
The Draymond Green Show is presented by FanDuel. It's NFL playoff time. No better place to get in on the action than FanDuel. FanDuel app is safe. You get paid fast. A lot of ways to play. The spread, the money line, team totals, players, props. A lot of stuff. Over-unders. Jump into the action. Same game parlays are my favorite. Just use the promo code COLIN and download the FanDuel app today. FanDuel now live in Ohio.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Draymond Green Show. This next guest I'm honored to have, a guy who I'm actually able to call a teammate now, but two-time world champion, hailing from Queens, New York, or grew up in Queens, New York. New York City point guard, which we're going to talk some about New York City point guards in this interview, but I'm honored to have him. Kenny the Jet Smith, my brother, thank you for joining the show.
I'm happy to be here, brother. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely, man. Looking forward to it. I mean, let's get right into it. I mean, just speaking on growing up in New York, what did that do for you in your basketball career, but also just in life? Like, I think, you know, we grow up in the environments that we grow up in, and they shape who you are as a person. What did growing up in New York City do for you?
Well, you know, definitely, Dre, it's different era now. But what, you know, in terms of from a personal standpoint, your antennas of life are up quicker. So you're able to read situations by people's body language, by body movements, because there's such good people in New York and there's such bad people in New York. And so you have to be able to really, at an early age, figure out who is whom. And for me, that helped me as a person. It helped me stay focused because my dad could always point, or my mom could always point to say, oh, do you want to be like him? Or do you want to be like him? Or do you want to be like him? Like the people that they were talking about, it's such a melting pot of people, Trey, that everyone's right in your neighborhood. Like the guy 5 blocks from you makes $1 million and the guy 5 blocks back from you doesn't make a dollar. And
absolutely,
you have all these melting pots of cultures mixed in. The craziest thing, though, was food. You know, we ain't even like when I went to the University of North Carolina. Right. I was at breakfast the first time we go to this team breakfast. I said, let me have some bagels and lox. And they were like, And what are you talking about? Bagels and lox. I did not know that bagels and lox was a Jewish food. Because I just grew around, I didn't really know pizza was ethnic. It was like Italian. I didn't know Jamaican food had Jamaican, but I did not know, like, it was just, oh, that's $1.50, that's $2. I never associated with ethnic groups. So like things like that growing up in New York, you have a, like, to me, I had a good spread of wealth of like just being a rounded person.
That's a very interesting thing. I'll tell you something funny about me growing up in Saginaw, Michigan. I didn't, and Jewish is a religion, but it's also, it acts almost as a race. Like, it is a religion, yeah, but it acts almost as a race.
I know what you mean.
I actually didn't know, growing up in Saginaw, like, that there were Jewish people. Like, I just thought there were white people and, like, black people. Like, growing up in Saginaw, I never knew that was a thing until I got to college. And so you could see the drastic difference in, like, growing up in a place like New York City, tough as nails, but bigger, more diverse, you're kind of exposed to everything. Me, growing up in Saginaw, in a place that's tough in a totally different way than New York City, yet I did not know anything.
Yeah, about, I'll, like, tell you what, Trey, Jewish, like, even because the crazy part, like, you see all of the mafia stories. Mm-hmm. There are so many of their kids that were on my basketball teams that I didn't really know that that's what their dads did. And I was like, I had no clue, because Queens, for some reason, was a nesting ground for those guys in those eras. So they sent all their kids to Catholic school, private schools. I went to a Catholic high school. And then people would be like, oh, don't mess with Billy. I'm like, why not? Like, no, just don't mess with Billy. Oh, don't mess with. And then by my senior year, I understood who their dads were and what they were doing, because I started seeing them on the front page of New York papers. I was like, oh, this is who Billy's dad is.
That's crazy.
Yes. So that was just like a normal thing. I had running through the city because of that. Because you think about this, like, most of us, we grew up in the hood. Like, all the guys in our neighborhood who were doing bad or doing dirt, so to speak, they like, okay, Dre, we about to do something. Get out the way. We don't want you. We know that you have a future in basketball, right? Or you have a future to go to college. I had the same thing. But then you compile that with, I had the mafia's families, the Jewish families that were in positive or negative. So everyone collectively in New York City was looking out for me. I could walk through New York City and skate through the city, and I never felt threatened at all because of that. That's what basketball did for me.
Do you still feel like that today when you walk through New York City?
Oh, without question. Like, New York, I joke around. I'm like, my name is not Kenny. It's Ken NY. So, like, I'm like, I could walk around because I told you we had those guys at our school.
Absolutely.
The head of the police chief came from my high school.
Oh, wow.
Of New York City. So I had the chief police chief who becomes ultimate police chief. The guy who's doing all the dirt. I live in a neighborhood that's got all of the different things. We're 80s, 90s babies. So we crack babies and all of that kind of, you know, people around us. So we got that going. So then most of the guys from my high school worked on Wall Street as well. So when I go, so you got Wall Street, you got drugs, you got money, you got every element, and there's nowhere in New York City I don't know anyone. It's impossible for me to walk anywhere and not know anyone.
That's impressive, man. That's impressive. That's
fun. It actually was fun. It was fun growing up in New York for me. Even though it was danger, but it was fun. It was fun.
And speaking of New York City and growing up there, St. John's is there. You chose to go play at North Carolina for Dean Smith. Why North Carolina over St. John's?
No, I would never play for St. John's. Only because my high school, I had to take the bus by St. John's. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm not getting on the same bus to go to college. there was no way I could fathom having a bus pass to go to college. I just couldn't. I was like, there's no way. And Lou Conosecco, who was there at the time, like, he is a New York icon. Like, he still treated me like I was a New York, like I was one of St. John's guy when he saw me. He'd see me, hey, Kenny, how you doing? Hey, we got some sneakers. Give Kenny some sneakers if he want to run. And he just knew I wasn't ever going to transfer from North Carolina to St. John's. But he was there. epitome of the New York basketball grandfather. And St. John's was our, I went to Malloy High School, which was the subsidiary of St. John's. So St. John's was the same diocese of priests that went there to my Catholic school. So like people taught at St. John's taught at my high school or vice versa. So we had a real close connection with St. John's University. But I was never going to take a bus to that school, bro. Never.
No chance. Never.
No, no chance. I wanted to see what that looked like. You know, the movies with the frat houses. You know what Michigan State looked like. You know what it, I wanted all that.
The proper college experience. I always say, I'm not sure I would have wanted to go to school in New York or go to school in L.A., like college in L.A., because the experience that I had at Michigan State in East Lansing, Michigan, you can't get that experience as a college player in New York. You can't get that experience as a college player in L.A. And that's always been my thing. It's like, even if you do great in L.A., UCLA can do great. UCLA has done great. USC can do great. They've done. The Lakers are still there.
Yeah.
Like the New York Knicks are still in New York City. If you win a championship the same year that the New York Knicks win a championship, they may not even have a parade for you.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's how drastic of a difference
it is. But one thing that they sell it for St. John's, you know, because I know Mark Jackson's my guy. That's my guy. And Chris Mullin's my guy. And I know they're going to be like, oh, he's killing St. They, what they sell is New York is your campus. They say your campus is New York City. And that's how they sell to people who aren't there. They're like, your campus is New York City. And for me, I was like, I lived there my whole life. It's always been my campus. I'm gone. I'm gone. It's been my campus my whole life. I don't need it no more.
The restaurants in New York City, they still cost the same if you go to St. John's, right?
No. I'm meaning this way. Because you're on the front page back then, before social media, you're on the front page of the newspaper, back page of the newspaper. You're not paying for nothing if you go to St. John's and you're Walter Berry, you're Mark Jackson, and you're Chris Mullin. You're not paying for nothing in New York City.
Yeah, but there's if you're everybody, no, that's three guys.
Yeah, I mean, but no, I'm talking about the whole St. John's team. Those guys had, they did have some really great privileges to being at St. John's. I would say that. I would say they had some good privileges.
Okay, well, that works then, because if I'm a college student, and nowadays NIL is different, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but if I'm a college student in New York City and I'm not getting those privileges, then you're essentially like living a life of a peasant because we don't have any money.
Yeah, you're broke. And even, you know what else, Dre, like what you always want is you want to feel appreciated, even more than getting a dollar or NIL deal. It's like you walk on campus and things stop because of what you're doing and how much work you're putting in on the campus and how much notoriety you bring it to the school. If you don't have that, it's a bad feeling. And I would never want that feeling. That's why, you know, when I went to North Carolina and I'm walking around with Sam Perkins and Michael Jordan, and I'm walking around and I'm seeing with these guys and how they and being entertained just by just their presence. I was like, like, hey, Drake, when we used to go, Duke was our rival for that school in Durham. So North Carolina Central sits in the middle, HBCU.
Absolutely.
So if you want to get your hair cut, you go into North Carolina Central. They got the best barbers. They got their whole student union. So this would show that we were better than them at this time. When we came in there, Dre, they would shut down the barbershop and no one could come in the shop. And I never forget this. Johnny Dawkins comes in trying to get a haircut, and he's a Duke player at the time, who's now a basketball coach in college basketball. And they wouldn't let him in. Jordan was like, if you open that door, we will never come back to get a haircut. And they didn't let him in. I was like, yes, we run this.
That had to hurt.
They didn't let him in because they used to shut it down for them or for us. So, but when we were in there first, Marge was like, nah, we in here. Don't open that door for them. So all the kids in North Carolina Central and the Luke, they would come and just look at us getting haircuts. We were like, because there was no NBA teams. We were rock stars. It was rock star status in North Carolina. Probably like East Lansing. It's got to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Rock star status.
That's incredible. And speaking of Michael Jordan, I want to roll into your North Carolina days. You go to North Carolina, Dean Smith's the coach, the legend Dean Smith, RIP. What was it like going to play for a coach like Dean Smith? And at that time, like, so now we all look at Dean Smith like the legend. At that time, did it have that same feel of going to play for a legend as it has now, like we look at him as the legend? Or was he just kind of still going through making his name?
No, he was a legend for sure. Me being a New Yorker, I was a pro basketball fan before I was a college basketball fan. So I knew, but I didn't know until I got there. And there's so many things, which is interesting, Dre. Like, I just finished writing a book, and it's called
Congratulations.
It's called Talk of Champions. And what it is, it's a tell-all book about everything I learned great from people.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And each chapter is named after a specific person and everything I learned great from them. And I wish I could, and I'm bestowing that onto my kids and the world so that you can have it early and get it all together. But if I knew it all at one time, man, it'd be crazy. So with Dean Smith, the most unique thing, there's a lot of great things about him, but one of the most unique things that he could have done to recruit me and got me to sign instantly. I got down there. I had no idea. I knew who Charlie Scott was because he played in the NBA. He was an NBA All-Star at the time. But I didn't know he was the first African-American player in the ACC. And really? I didn't know the first. And he played for North Carolina, and Dean Smith recruited him said he's the first. If you walk into any African-American home and say, I recruited the first African-American basketball player to ever play at the University of North Carolina or the ACC, everyone would go, oh, I'm coming to your school. There's no debate. And I asked him, I said, why didn't you ever tell me that? And he said, I didn't recruit African-American Charlie Scott. I recruited Charlie Scott.
Wow.
And from then, he said, the second thing he says, now that you're here, this was when apartheid was going on with all of the things in Africa. We had the shanties on the campus, and it was protests about Mandela. And he goes, now as an African-American student, what are you going to do that is not related to basketball with this? I didn't even know what apartheid was at that time. I'm coming out of high school, not really into politically smart. You know what I mean? And that was the first two things he said to me. I was like, that's a different individual without question. So, yes,
absolutely.
It was, for me, it was an out-of-body experience. It was like playing for Mandela, playing for Mother Teresa, playing for Martin Luther King. Like, it was like his knowledge and awareness of self was... I had never experienced anything like that. And especially from someone who was non-African-American. That was the first time that I ever, a white man had ever asked me, what are you going to do for Black people? That's the first white person that ever asked me that question.
What did you then do?
I did research. I was like, damn, I don't even know what apartheid really is. I just read about it on the headlines. So I researched it. Then they had the shanties on campus. So I helped build some of the shanties on campus. You know, like I just did small things, gave some time here and there, but I wasn't aware. He just made me aware of something that I probably would have, as an athlete, could have skated by because at this time, it wasn't like it is today. You know, Muhammad Ali was the only one that people asked about, you know, what was going on in, other than his sport. And so for him to say that and to challenge me as an African-American young man, and I don't even think I had a Black coach that ever challenged me like that.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. You go on, and by the way, you said I gave a little bit of time for those listening to this. I don't think you understand what giving a little bit of time in college means. Like,
oh,
you don't have time.
Like, exactly.
You don't have time. Your schedule is not your schedule. Your life is not your life. Like, you don't have time. So, number one, for Dean Smith to ask you that, I think is incredible. Number two, for him to allow you to have the time to do that, like, you don't have time in college.
You don't have time.
I think that's honorable.
You don't.
I think that's very honorable.
Yeah, so it's a different experience.
You join the team with Michael Jordan and Sam Perkins. When you arrive and you join those guys on that team, obviously looking at Michael Jordan, then no one's saying, oh, man, I see him. This guy is going to be the greatest player ever to play. But did you see something in him different at that time? Maybe work ethic, maybe athleticism, something that made you think he was special? Or was it just like, no, like he's Michael Jordan. That's my teammate. He's really good.
I think it was the summers that I noticed it. It was his work ethic in the summertime. During the season, we're all working the same amount. Mm-hmm. So no one's getting an edge on work ethic. Like, we're all doing the same stuff.
Absolutely.
But in the off season, when the pros were at that time, you know, we probably had 22 guys who were in the NBA from North Carolina. And they all would come back and play. And he would just dominate guys. And these are guys who are NBA All-Stars that I want to get their autograph. And
absolutely.
He would just dominate Dre in terms of, like, everyone has a day. Like, I'm sure that when East Lansing, you had a day or two or a week, you go. But it was every day that he did it. And he was the first guy that I saw, because I'm a trash talker. I'm from New York. That's all we do. Talk, talk, talk. So, but he was the first guy that I saw that could back up everything he said. He could back it up. And I always said to him, I'm like, yo, you're the perfect basketball body. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you're 6'6", you can play with the bigs, and you're 6'6", and you can guard the smalls. And you have super athleticism. And then in college, he had a perfect jump shot. So I used to be like, how do you miss? Your jump shot, your elbow's always in. You should never miss. The one thing that I thought that he didn't have when I was a freshman was his ball handling. He was good at darting to the rim, Dre, but he couldn't shake you. So I used to be like, oh, I got Mike. And he's like, oh, you going to guard me? I'm like, yeah, because you can't dribble. And back then, we used to handle. You ain't got no handle. So, long story short, we play and pick up, blah, blah, blah. So next year comes and he goes, you calling me? I'm like, yeah, I got Mike. You like handles ridiculous. He's like, I got a handle now. So even like that, you know, the documentary says he thinks of things, even when he doesn't probably, he probably don't remember saying it, but he came back a year later and the first thing he says, oh, I got a handle now. And he worked on, I'll say this about him, Dre. He's the only bad player in basketball history that the things he came in that was his weaknesses were his strengths when he left the league. His ball handling, his shooting, his turnaround jump shot, his post game was probably some of his weaknesses. Those were his strengths when he left the league. There's nobody else like that. Right? Yeah, I'm telling you.
Kobe's ball handling wasn't that. Kobe's ball handling
was good. As a rookie, he was doing all that stuff. As a rookie,
It was fancy. It was fancy, but I don't think it was like he was doing the long crossover stuff. But it wasn't a tight handle. It was loose.
Mike couldn't do a long crossover. When he got in the league, he couldn't. That pullback on Brian Russell, he would have never been able to do that when he first got in the league. There was like no way that I would imagine he's doing that move to win an NBA Finals. That's what I mean. Like, that move for Kobe, I would still be like, okay, he likes to do all that and one. He could. I would never imagine Mike, that would be his signature move that, like, could define his career, could define his career. Like, I just think that, I mean, Kobe might be that guy, but I don't know any other, like, that every weakness was his strength at the end.
That's impressive. So Mike leaves the team. Once he leaves, the team kind of becomes yours. You become a consensus All-American. go on to be the number six pick by the Sacramento Kings. What was your experience like in getting drafted to Sacramento? Because I know for me, like, you went from New York to North Carolina. That's a big difference. I got drafted to the Golden State Warriors. I had never been out of the state of Michigan. So I was homesick going to California. And I don't think people would ask me, like, yo, what's it like out there? I would just say, different. They'd be like, well, what's different? I don't really know how to explain different to you, but it's just different. And that was a big thing for me my rookie year, that if I'm being honest with you, it almost cost me my career because I was so homesick. Like, I was just turned off by all of it. What was that experience like for you getting drafted to Sacramento?
See these tears coming down my eye? I was ready to cry. First of all, I didn't even know Sacramento. Like, they didn't come on TV. They had terrible management and ownership at that time. But the one caveat was Bill Russell had just taken the job over. So, Bill, I have the distinction of being the only player that Bill Russell has drafted. He drafted me into the NBA. You know, and so the great thing about that experience was every day Bill had a rule that I had to sit next to him on all team planes and all team buses. And he said, I heard every Boston Celtics story. I heard every civil rights story. I heard, because he never slept on any of the planes or the things. So I had, rookie, you didn't sleep last night? So I heard every story. That was the great caveat of that relationship. I became very close with Bill Russell. Even to this day, I still speak to his wife. You know, I mean, really close with him in 6 months. The downfall of that is the team was terrible. And the organization wasn't a championship mix. So meaning, like, North Carolina has a rule, Dean Smith had a rule. If a player calls him in the office, he's going to pick up the phone. Roy Williams did it, and I'm sure Hubert Davis is doing it now. He's going to pick up the phone, regardless if he's talking to the president of the United States, unless he's talking to another player. That's the only time he won't pick up for you. I get drafted on draft night, Dre. Hey, you get drafted. They give you how to give you the phone, and you talk to the team.
I was at home, champ, so I don't know all that, but you got a big dog.
But you know,
I've seen it. A 35th pick, I didn't get that experience, champ.
I know you got the 32 people list in front of you. You can remember everything. I forgot about that. So you pick up the phone, and they go, I'm like, hey, this is Kenny Smith. The secretary goes, 1 second. I'm on the phone for like 3 minutes. This is on draft night. Right after I come off the stage. She gets back. She goes, hi, Sacramento team. Kings, may I help you? I go, this is Kenny Smith. I just got drafted by the... this is Kenny Smith. I'm here to talk to Bill Russell. I didn't say drafted yet. And so she goes, 1 second. Another 4 minutes come go by. Hi, this is Sacramento Kings. May I help you? Who's calling? I said, this is Kenny Smith. I get drafted. So right then, I'm turned off. Like, I'm turned off. I'm like, I just got drafted sixth, and I'm going to a place that don't value. They don't value me. They don't value what's going on. Now, obviously, Coach Russell hadn't been there long enough to change the culture. He was new just like me. So the culture was so bad in Sacramento. We used to do our own laundry. Guys would forget their jerseys, Dre, because they're doing their own laundry at home and they're packing their bags. You know how the team takes care of that? You see? Every team, and even in the 90s, man, teams did that. You're doing all of that, and you're trying to play and concentrate, and they're like, oh, you want your laundry done, you got to pay $100 a month, which is nothing. But the fact that they would make you pay to have someone do their laundry to show that they didn't care about you, that's all it does. Because $100 doesn't hurt me. It doesn't hurt the team. It just shows me that you don't care. That's
absolutely all.
So I didn't like that experience. Going to Houston was like a godsend.
Yeah.
It was like a breath of fresh air.
You go to Houston, you're then with Hakeem. What's something that people don't know about Hakeem that made him special? Like, obviously, we all know the footwork was incredible. Mm-hmm. But what was something that he did on the basketball court that was more of an underrated thing that people don't quite give credit for, that was actually one of the things that really made him great?
Before I go to basketball, I've been blessed to play with great people and be around great mentors. That's why I wrote the book, honestly. He's the most honorable man I've ever met in my life. Most honorable, Dre. Like, if Akeem, like right now, if I was stuck on a highway and they gave me a cell phone, they said, you got three people to call to come get you, I'm calling Akeem. He's going to be one of the three. He's always going to do exactly what he's going to, what he says, what he's going to do. He never variants from what he says. He's so honorable in what his word is. Like we had a saying in New York, word is bond, word is bond. Your word is bond. Yeah. Like, no, his word is bond. It is 100% of what it is. He means it all the time. Always the most honorable dude I've ever been around. So on a basketball court, you're going to trust it. Yo, Kenny, I'm going to be there. I'm coming. Don't worry. He's going to be there. He said it. He's going to be there. He's going to be there. So the most underrated thing was his word. The second most underrated as a physical standpoint was he would be unbelievable in today's game because he could switch 1 to 5. And so he could... Guy come off the pick and you got the one. Oh, he's moving his feet. And if you throw the lob, he's going back to still try to contest the lob. I've never seen a player that could double in the pick and roll and get back to his man on the roll and still block the shot. He was the most unique athlete in terms of instinct. Yeah. Like, he just knew when to leave. He knew when to stay. He knew when to come. I know you're a great defensive player, and that's why I kind of watch certain things that you do on the pick and roll. And it's very – okay, imagine if you were 6'10", and your athleticism was Blake Griffin. That was Akeem. That's him.
Jesus.
He's Christ. You on a defensive end at 6'10", with Blake Griffin's young athleticism.
That's who he is. That's impressive. You know, I heard something about Hakeem that I think is even more impressive than anything he's done. About, I heard Hakeem owns like half of Houston. I heard he's a real estate guru. And I don't know if that's true or not, but if that is true, and he's a real estate guru like that, the fact that he is that, you don't hear anything from him. You don't see anything. Like, and so the fact, I've heard that. And then you
heard it right. Olajuwon Corporation is real. And the crazy thing is he started it in college.
Really?
He was living in a townhome in college. He gets drafted by Houston.
Yes.
And his first purchase, he bought the condo that he was in. And then it just so on and so on. Then he moved, got out, kept, and it just, but it's, he is the most underrated wealthy man in the NBA. Underrated his wealth of not only that, but just his business savvy. And, you know, to have that kind of mindset he's always had. I've never walked in a room or to his house or to anything and said, man, what is this dude doing around Akeem? Never that. His company that he keeps, you're like, man, can I know you? Can I get to know who you are? Can I figure out how to be next to you? His company was impeccable. Like I said, the most honorable person I ever met.
Tip off the NBA season with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. New customers get $150 in free bets guaranteed. $150 when you place your first $5 bet. Plus, FanDuel's the only sportsbook gives all its customers 3 months of NBA League Pass. Cool. When they make a $5 bet, that's all in the NBA. That way you can watch all the action you bet on, everything from money line to point spreads, the totals. Don't miss your chance. $150 in free bets plus 3 months of NBA League Pass. Gotta put in the promo code Colin. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NBA. 21 plus and present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Indiana, and Louisiana. permitted parishes only. Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia. First online real money wager only. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 Arizona, 1-888-789-7777, or visit ccpg.org/chat. Connecticut, 1-800-GAMBLER, or visit fanduel.com/RG. In Colorado, Indiana, Jersey, and Virginia, 1-877-770-STOP. In Louisiana, 1-800-270-7117. For confidential help in Michigan, 1-877-HOPENY or text HOPENY 467-369. In New York, Tennessee, redline 1-800-889-9789. Tennessee, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In West Virginia.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Leesa, the sleep experts. Here at Leesa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Leesa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Leesa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
That's impressive. And speaking of Hakeem, obviously dominated with his back to the basket. Do you think that style will ever come back into the NBA with the way the NBA has transitioned to more, like, 80% of centers in the NBA, maybe even more, can't play with their back to the basket today.
Yeah, he would kill this era only because, Dre, he was actually the king of the mid-range shot too. So, yeah. Like, his whole thing was, I'm going to face you and like, do inside pivots and do guard moves as a big. Vernon Maxwell and all of we shoot after practice, and he would just do all guard moves. He's like, "Oh, Kenny, it's the same moves on the box. Up and unders, it's step throughs out front. You know, crossover, head fake, it's the same stuff. I'm gonna do all your moves. Let's go. And he does. But then when it was underrated, he never would take them. But you know, I shot a lot of threes. So he would always get in a three shooting contest. And he'd make 5 out of 8 threes from each spot, like easily. But in the game, he's like, I said, "Dream, why don't you shoot threes?" Because, you know, he's like, "Why are we going to shoot threes? I only have to play 3 times a year. Patrick Ewing, David Robinson, and Shaq. That's it. Everyone else I kill." he's like, "No one else can guard me here. The rest of them, that's it. I move out." He said, "The only time I move off the block is against those three guys because no one else can guard me." But he could shoot the three. He led the league in steals 1 year, so defensively he was incredible. Defensive player of the year, MVP. His mid-range game was crazy. his pick and roll lob to the rim would have been Blake Griffin like, and he would have shot the three. He would have been like, I'm trying to think of a, he would have been able to finish like Clint Capella on the lobs because he read the, he yep. knew, he knows when to leave. He would have been defensively 6'10", and he would have probably been. Who takes that mid-range jumper now at the five?
Who on the takes pick and the pop? Mid-range Joel.
He's an athletic Joel Embiid. Me and Sam Cassell, because Sam, you know, that's my guy. He always puts me on the phone when he's on the bus with all his 76ers. And he, and uh-huh. they have this argument about how Dream couldn't guard Joel. Come on, Kitty. Come on. Now tell him, Kitty. He's an athletic Joel Embiid. Like, Joel is athletic, but he's not. He's more brute strength.
Yeah.
But he,
yeah.
they play yeah. a lot alike. A lot alike. That mid-range shot, he kind of backs you in. But I just think he's a much better defender than Joel. That's it. He's just a much better defender.
And strong enough. He had to be strong enough, right? He guards Shaq.
Yeah, yeah. Shaq... I've never seen anyone not be outpowered by Shaq but him. And wow. I don't know if it was because it's his footwork, his strength, or just his tenacity. Like, Dre, like, you'd like him. He's got a lot of that in you. Like, before he went to devout Muslim, like, it was like teams were fearful not only of him as a defender, but they were a little bit scared of his physicality. You know, and how he would treat you if you showed any type of weakness. So I had dog. I had him, Vernon Maxwell. I was talking so much, man. I was so happy that I had them dogs around me, man. Those two dudes, oh, my God. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. My favorite teammate of all time is probably Chucky Brown, just because we fall from New York. But Vernon Maxwell and Sam Cassell and Mario Elie, we should just sit on the bus and do this all day. Dre, just what we're doing. So when I'm on TV, when I first got on, they used to be like, "Man, you should pay us. You just saying stuff we said in the back of the bus all of years." So those are my guys, man.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Speaking of y'all time with the Houston Rockets, I hate it because I've heard similar stuff like that with our championships. Not exactly the same, but. Along the lines. People say, if Michael Jordan didn't leave for those 2 years, do y'all still win those two championships? Quite frankly, it don't matter. You're a champion. But
no, it matters. It matters.
What it does.
It matters.
So what do you feel about that? What do you think happens if MJ does not leave those 2 years?
I'm going to say this. Michael Jordan is, to me, the greatest player that ever touched the basketball. And I'm actually glad that we didn't play them because I love the resume that he has that he's never lost in the finals. Because as a fan, a basketball fan, I think that's a great resume. But they wouldn't have beat us. They would not have beaten us, Dre, because of two things. Not because he wasn't the greatest player, because Akeem was also the number, he would have been number one or two player in the world at that time too, in those championship yes. runs. But the Bulls were too little then. People forget. Uh-huh. They had, the reason they lost to Orlando wasn't Shaq. It was Horace Grant was gone. And Horace Grant was there. And they yeah. lifted Horace Grant up after the series because he dominated the series more than he's ever done offensively because they were too little. So all of those guys, and they were just too little for Dream. Weddington and Phil Jackson didn't double team. The next year we won it, he comes back. They hadn't had Rodman. Rodman yeah. wasn't there yet. They're still too little. So they just would have not been able to dominate us. Because in that first championship years, when they won, I think, three in a row, you know, we in the East and West, you only play them twice. We went 6-2 in the regular season against them. Now, it's not the playoffs. Like, it's different. But that just shows yeah,
it's
that, like,
of course, but
like, yo, in 3 years, you only beat them twice? Like, wait a minute. Like, that's saying a lot that they had trouble with us. Even when they were winning championships, they used to come to Houston and get L's. So, and it was because they wouldn't double. And then when they were too slow on the perimeter, because myself, Vernon, and Sam at that time, I was a Jet for a reason. I could get by people. Vernon get by people easily. Sam could dribble by people. They were just too slow with BJ, Steve, and they on the perimeter. So we got baskets a little bit more frequently too. So now I don't think they would have beat us, man. I don't. I think they were too little. Now if they had Rodman, they would have beat us probably. I think I would have been like, I ain't know about. But no Rodman, no Grant, we smacking them.
Why do they beat y'all if they had Rodman? Do you think Rodman would have guarded Dream well?
It's just the second top shot opportunities. Like, we were getting second shot opportunities. You know, you don't have to, like, Dream is going to be efficient, but he might not be a dominant in one game in the series. Like, so you have an ease. You can even it out. It's like, every series, like, okay, when y'all play Cleveland, who would you guard?
Kevin Love.
Okay. Take you out of there. How many rebounds is Kevin Love going to get?
Kevin Love, hell of a rebounder. Oh, 15 rebounds.
He was top three in that era. He was top three power forward in the game.
12 to 15 rebounds, you can book it.
You can book it. Now, not only rebound, offensive rebound, putbacks. You're like, no. You're going to do a little bit of that, but we shutting some of that down. That's what they could have done. They could have shut it down. Without them, nah. We wild on the boards. He's all over the rim. He's an animal over the. It's too much. And we shooting threes, and we the first team to shoot threes, Dre. It's too much. We created the four out, one in offense. Nobody was doing that before us. Everybody else was doing two guard fronts. We the first team to win an NBA championship playing four out and one in. Too much. It was too much for them.
So what happens? I think a lot of people don't understand from year to year, championship teams are different. Even if you go back to back, it's a different team. Like, very seldomly does an NBA team come back the exact same from one year to the next. And it could be one or two pieces that the public may not see, and they leave, and you know on that team, like, man, we missed this guy. We missed that guy. Was there someone that y'all lost after the second championship that changed the whole dynamic for y'all team?
I think it was management. The belief was that Dream and Clyde got it done.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the moment, no one's believing that. Oh, it's a team. Oh, kumbaya. Everybody did their part. Kenny, you broke the NBA record for threes that game. Sam, you came in and got 30 in game two of the NBA. Mario, you hit the kiss of death. Like, everybody remembers that in the moment. Then Absolutely. About a year and a half removed, they don't remember that. And they
Absolutely.
Go, oh,
that's a fact.
We can get a guy to do it. I'm going to go here with you. We can get a guy to do what Gary Payton III does. Oh, no, you can't. Oh, no, you can't. Now, somebody might run into that role, but you're going to miss it. You're like, you're going to miss GP3. His role is big, was big with y'all in certain areas.
GP2, rather.
Right, GP2. Yeah. You're going to miss GP2. Like, you're going to miss this guy. So, like, I thought that they thought we were a three-point shooting team. And they forgot the fact that we were able to get threes off, because if you ran at us, we went by you.
Yeah.
Where then they brought in other guys around Dream and Clyde that they were just three-point shooters. And so they really couldn't create offense for themselves if they ran at them. Like, you know, you run at Steph, he's going to go by you. You run at Clay, he got the two dribble pull-up. Those guys are like, no, we staying in this spot. We not moving. Like,
and we shoot it.
And we shoot it. Not. And now you shoot contested threes.
Yeah.
And I thought they just, management didn't really, they didn't take what Sam Cassell did. They didn't take what Robert Horry did. They didn't take what myself did. Or Mario they kept. But I don't think they thought that the value that the three of us brought was just the spacing of the floor.
Absolutely. And speaking of management, a question I actually had that I wanted to ask you. A few years back, your name would constantly come up and when head coaching jobs would open up, your name would come up that you wanted to get into coaching. is that something you still want to do? And, well, let's just start there. Is that something that you still want to do? Do you want to be a head coach in the NBA?
Well, interestingly enough, I've only once told someone. I never had an agent initially that would even look for those things. I was just getting calls. So like, just like you said, I'd be on a set, literally my phone would ring. And they were like, Kenny, what you just said made sense. Would you want to interview for the job as coaching? So I did like three of those. And I was like, yo, I might need an agent. So I never pursued the first three. So I had no idea what even an interview would look like. I didn't know what you're supposed to come in thinking or anything like that. I think I've gotten past the stage where now the phone rings and they go, would you be interested in running our team? And so because of Dre, I think now I know most of the guys who are presidents of teams. I know a bunch of general managers. I know a bunch of agents. So it's like, my relationships, I know a bunch of players. I'm in the gym in the summertime in L.A. watching dudes and hanging out with dudes and watching dudes play because I have younger sons. So I take them to the pickup games where KD and Kyrie and Trae Young and all those dudes would go. I'm like, yo, let's go watch them. I'm a hoop person. Mm-hmm. So my relationships are real enough where I think they're starting to say that. And I've gotten one last year, and I said, no, I'm not ready. I just didn't think that they were ready. And so Now I think I'm getting those calls about, yo, can you help put a team together? Because I got my ear to the street, so to speak. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And at Turner, I know all you guys just signed new deals. How much longer do you see yourself doing that? It's been 25 years, which is absolutely insane.
Insane. Like, I could do this forever. Honestly, because Dre, I could watch y'all game, and in the first 6 minutes of the game, I could say it's an 8-point game. I can't say it before the game, but once I see the first like 6-7 minutes in the trend of the game, I'm like 90% right. Like 90% of the time, I'm like, if they don't do this, it's not gonna happen. Because as Golden State, you're looking. I always tell, like, I talk to even Bob sometimes. You know, your guy Bob Myers. Yep. I'm like, I says that teams a lot of times. You guys, as a general manager, president, you're looking at it like this. So you only see your hand. Absolutely. My job is to pay attention to the 27 teams that are, the 20 teams that have a chance to win it, right?
Yeah.
That's going to make the playoffs and have a chance to win it. I got to pay attention to those. So I'm seeing all of their trends. I'm seeing what they're doing over here before you even play them. You might play the Knicks once, but I'm watching the Knicks 20 times. So I just know all the trends of the league that I'm not looking at it like this.
Yes. Yes. And do you feel comfortable with the way players have changed? Because it's been a long time since you've had to deal with players. And I'm telling you now, I'm in year 11. These young dudes different, man. Do you feel comfortable with having to deal with young talents coming in? Because it's just a totally different generation and these young dudes different, man.
There's a saying that you know already. Like, has Draymond Green changed when he's gotten, these big contracts? No, it's usually the people around you change.
That's a fact.
I ain't changing. Like, the one thing I know about you, just because you come into the studio, guys come in on a regular to our studio. The honesty wins. Like,
that's a fact.
Honesty. You ain't got to be brutal and be, you don't have to be condescending. But no, like, bro, this is really what I see. And I knew it was different. And I know if this guy took criticism, and anybody could. Two guys, honestly, but LeBron was the first guy. I went on tour with him when that movie came out about his life. So they asked me to MC in all of his different cities. And he had won the MVP. They didn't win the championship that year, but now he got a movie made about his life. So he's talking. We're in the back. You know how everybody's in the back, you start talking. He's like, man, what do you, you know, Kenny, what do you see? And I said, LeBron, like, I don't know if you're going to hear what I'm saying. And he's like, what do you mean I'm not going to hear what you're saying, Kenny? He's like, because you're the greatest player in the world right now. You got a movie made about your life that I'm emceeing, and you still got holes in your game. And wow. Sometime I said, there's a saying that my dad used to always tell me, and he used to say, it's hard to work hard when you're sleeping in silk robes. And I don't know if you're sleeping in silk robes. So he's like, no, tell me. I said, the one thing I see is like, your back to the basket game is just average. I said, and at times you pass up an open shot for a greater shot, but the greater shot is your open shot.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if he one ear out the other and he just did that naturally, but I'm able to tell him that, and he was able to respond to it. This is the MVP of the league at that time. So I'm like, I can tell him that. I'm going to tell anybody. Like it's not – guys recognize real. They know what it is. And they know when you're faking it. Dre, you know when a general manager or president of a team walks to you and he's faking his speech.
Facts.
You know for a
fact. Right through it.
You can see right through it. And for sure. You're like, I'm not – and we're from neighborhoods that we have to read people fast.
You have to, because it's life or death. If you got to read.
That's the difference, right? Like, there, other people's decisions have consequences. Ours had life or death consequences. So you got to read fast. I know I'm in a room with Dre. I'm like, I'm not faking anything I see or hear. And I don't, but that's not even my nature. So yeah. And then do I know damn basketball? I know it better than, yeah, I don't think there's nobody know it more than me that do what I do. So of course, like I'm coming to Dre, I'm gonna be like, yo, Dre, listen, this altercation you had, like, there's nobody in the NBA that's not had a fight, bro. There's nobody in the league. I'm not bringing you guys together. You bring y'all together. And I'll see you tomorrow. And I'm walking out the room. That's it. What am I going to bring you in a room? Have you talk? Like, now you're looking at me like, oh, he's trying to be some fake police cop and trying to. No. Dre, you know how to. You done had many. We've been in areas where we've had many of this, where you got to have something like that happen. And that dude ride on the bus next to you in school. That happens every day in our neighborhoods growing up. That's not unusual. It's just unusual it was on camera.
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna go, you know what? Dre, you handle him. I'ma handle the media. See you later. That's it. How you gonna feel with that? You gonna be like, okay, that's real. I'm not faking it.
You gotta handle it. Because number one, the ball's just been thrown back into your court. What you gonna do with it? You can't fail in that moment.
Right. It's your job to do that. Because I can bring y'all in all day. But if y'all don't like each other, y'all don't get it resolved. It's never resolved anyway. So I'm like, what am I doing? I'm just, yo. But I'm telling who's got to handle it, and I'm out. But I know how to handle Charles, Stephen A. Smith, Shaq. I know how to handle Ernie. I know how to handle everybody on TV. I know how to talk to them. I got this. I got that.
Speaking of Shaq, Charles, Ernie, and I've been up there on the set. I've had the pleasure and honor of being on the set with you guys. But this is something that I truly wonder. Do y'all view that as a team and there's roles within that team when y'all step up on that stage? Because it's an entire production. Like, that show has gotten bigger than anybody, like than any one person. And it's an entire production. And I feel like everyone makes it work in their own way. Do y'all feel like it's a team and you have roles in what you do up there?
100%. And the one thing that I've learned that, and you've learned being on championship teams, I'm sure, is that everyone's role is really valuable. Like, I'm not running into a Christmas tree, bro, but we need that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Charles is not running to the board and breaking down and putting X's and O's and going in the screen, but we need that. Charles is going to come with an unfiltered filter coffee machine of black coffee, and you're going to taste it. But we need that. Ernie is going to just be the ability to understand when to move on to the next segment. Yeah. We need that. So, like, at no point do we ever look. Here it is. And I don't know if you felt like this and you can agree. When you're on a championship team, I never feel in competition with the guy next to me.
Never.
There it is. Never. I don't feel competition with them anymore. I've gone past that. You know, initially, and then you get, we've gone past that. You know, I'm never sitting on a bench hoping Sam Cassell misses the shot so I can get back in the damn game. I'm like, yo, kill this dude, Sam. You know what I mean? Like, I never feel in competition. Like, and that's how I feel on our show. I never feel in competition with those guys.
Have you ever felt like Shaq and Chuck will really get into it? Because I don't think people realize, like, some of those moments you have up there, like, you're still a human being. You still have an opinion. And at the end of the day, we're all competitive as hell.
Yeah, that's my job. And so, that's my job. Like, I'm going to throw gasoline on the fire, but I know I'm in charge of the extinguisher too. Mm. So when it gets that point, and their egos are here.
Absolutely.
Here. Absolutely. I know my job at time is to take the pressure off of it being about Chuck and him and make it about me and him, or making it about me and Chuck at times too. So it's not where he's just like, it's them, because they are here and they're ready to come. And then 5 minutes later, that's what I'm saying. 5 minutes later, we're in the back. They're picking each other up. Shaq is like, I bet I can lift you up. I bet I can bench press you. 5 minutes after, they were ready to just, that's what we know. We grew up in that. We understand that is not long lasting. But it's real. It's real.
And speaking of TV, you done something on TV, and I have an opinion about it. Not necessarily an opinion, but thoughts.
Okay.
And so I guess it is an opinion of what I think I see, personally. Mm-hmm. You and your ex-wife, y'all had a reality TV show. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like having a reality TV show ultimately affected your marriage in a negative way?
No, I don't think that was it at all, because, Dre, I was never all in. Because I produced it. So I was the executive producer and producer. I went to Turner. Because at the time in my household, my daughter, who's now on NCILS in LA, and she's LLKJ's daughter on the show. So she's his daughter. So she's done like 10, 12 episodes. My other daughter just finished a Disney movie. And my ex she wanted to be in television. So I was like, as a man, whenever all of those things are in your household, you're like, how can I help? You know? And yes, I was like, look.
Absolutely.
I was like, look, I don't want to do this. I'm doing this for you guys. So I'm just wanting to shine light on you guys so it could possibly help propel your career. And through that show got my daughter a record deal. It got my other daughter a manager. So it did move in the right directions. Because I was never on, like, you was never going to hear, like, I'm like Biggie. I'm old school. I'm like, problem with my wife, don't discuss them. Lear, Jess, I lost them. You know what I mean? I'm Biggie. So you're never going to see any of that. And that's why we only did one season, because you're never going to see any of that. I think that if there was one reason why anyone, if you have a girlfriend, an ex, a wife, ex-wife, there's one reason why y'all not together, you would still be together. There's never one reason. It's got to be a multitude of things to end something so big where families are involved and, you know, friends are involved, her friends and your friends. The other, like, it's got to be a multitude of things. There could be a multitude of small things, but there's a multitude. But I don't think that. Actually, that was fun. And I'll hit you on this. Because my kids were going to college, my older kids. So it was the first time that they were back. Everybody was back in the house for the first time. So we were playing board games. Okay. So we were telling stories that we had forgotten. So that actually helped it go longer than it probably should have. It helped go longer because of that. We became a little bit more of a unit again. And so there it is.
Do you have any regrets as far as your marriage goes or your...
not really, honestly, because I really believe, Dre, like, for me, when I hear people, from where we come from, when you hear about divorce, you hear like, oh, he was cheating, she was cheating, somebody was fighting, somebody beat somebody up. When none of those things happen, I'm always in the mindset of like, oh, we still going to work, because none of those things were at play. So now I'm like, I had to get out of my Queens left, right, city mode and say, what? This is why? This is not, like, you know what I mean? Because left, right, city Kenny is different from the Kenny that was here. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, absolutely. What are you talking about? Like, what? There's none of this, there's none of that, none of this. None, wait, this is not, we not feeling good about each other? I had to get into like another space of intellect that I probably will help me in the future, because where I come from, those are the only three things that you get. That's not your girl no more. Forget wife. That ain't my girl because I cheated on her. She cheated on me or we just arguing all day. That's the only reason. So for me, that level of intelligence to kind of come to and have more of an emotional intelligence about it. But what I always realized, Dre, is in life, this is when I feel good about myself. And it wasn't really just her, but just in general. When I realized, like, I'm great for me. I'm good enough for me. But I don't have to be good enough for Draymond. And when you can, like, it's easy said than done, but when you can accept that, you're like, oh, life is good. Like, you walk around smiling all the time, and people are like, man, yo, you still, how you look so young? And then I'm like, yo, because I smile a lot, bro. because I know I'm okay with not being good enough or just being good enough for me. I'm okay with that.
I respect that. I got a few more questions. We've been going for an hour. Be conscious of your time.
No, we good. Yeah.
And two of them are advice, and then one I want your opinion on something, because it's something that's very close to me and then very close to you. But that's going to be the last one. Number one is, what would your advice be to me? Someone that's I got four more questions. What would your advice be to me? Someone that's looking to go into television when I'm done playing. What would your advice be, and what's something that you would have done differently than you actually did?
For you, I would say my advice for you is, the more you win now on your way out in the last 5-6 years of this career, the more longer your television career will be. So now you've established yourself as the guy who we can talk to, not just about the game, but about politics, about social issues. Everyone else has already established that, you know? So now, the more you win is the more insight you have on everything else, because you're going to have one as a young player. You're going to be one young as a great player. You're going to learn as the best player. You're going to learn as the best defender. Then you're going to learn, you're going to be as a minimum role, how to win. So you're going to be able to talk to about everybody and how they feel in a locker room, and nobody else will be able to do what you do. So the more you win now, so now my focus would be, let me lock in on how do we win more championships, because my role is so different from when I was, like, when you first got there, it's like, yo, if Dre don't get 12 rebounds and 16 points, they might not win. Now it's like, if he don't lock down the guy and get 12. Now your role just, so you're going to know what every player feels. And to me, win more. And the more you win, you'll be doing this for 30 years. You'll be like, oh, Kenny said 20. I did it 30. Like, because you'll have an insight when everybody's talking about something, they goes, no, I think that's one of the values that I have right now. I was in high school, McDonald All-American, voted top 35 player ever in high school basketball. You get a ball for that. I looked on that ball. I was like Shaq and KG and Kyrie. I'm like, damn, I'm on a crazy ball, right? Uh-huh. College, I was a college player of the year. Player of the year in college and playing out a story program. Won two NBA championships. And then also at the end of the career, I was like, oh, damn, my role is so diminished. So now I know I had never had a DNP until my 10th year in the league.
Wow.
I had never not started on a team ever until my 9th year in the league. Wow. I had never come off the bench. High school, college, or pro. Until my 9th year in the league. So I got a different appreciation in my last year and a half about guys, how they come off the bench, how they might not play that night. Like, I was like, holy shit, this is it? I was like, oh my God, I used to laugh at these dudes and ask them, why they not ready? How'd you come in the game and you're not excited? I understood it. You're going to understand what champions think.
So... Did it really affect you in a negative way in that 9th season once you realized you were coming off the bench? Like, what was your attitude? What was your mindset initially?
I thought I could always contribute until it was one. You know, they say there's one play. Mm-hmm. It was one play for me. Dre, when I used to get a steal, right? I get the steal. You know how you take a picture to see who's tracing you? And I would just see guys like, and about my 9th year in the league, I saw guys doing this. I'm like, damn, they think they could catch me. And then they were catching me. Like, make it layup. I have to do where before I was just going and I'm dunking. I couldn't. I'm like, damn, I can't dunk it. I can't break it. I'm like, it's time to give it up. Because no matter how much money you make, the feeling of feeling inferior.
Yes.
There's no value on that. And I was starting to feel inferior. And whenever I feel inferior in anything, I'm like, I cannot be part of this. And I had another deal. The Spurs called me and were like, yo, you want to come be back up for A.B. Johnson? I was like, no, I do not want to feel inferior. And that was the best decision I made because I stayed at TNT.
So in your mind, what Russell Westbrook is doing is honorable.
But I don't know if he's feeling inferior yet.
But he's playing well, and he's taking on that role.
And in terms of, you know, getting to the rim, he still gets there. I don't know if he's at that point. I think Allen Iverson got there where he was probably like, yo, I can't get by people like I used to with the crossover. You know, Russ is about another year away from that. But what he's doing and his mental fortitude to live in Los Angeles, be from Los Angeles, and they make every game like it's a playoff game. Every play is like a playoff play, and still have the energy and the excitement to play. I've never seen that. No. I don't think I could do that. I would be like, trade me. I just couldn't do that in that environment, knowing that. And see, knowing that the guy in front of me, I'm better than. Like, he really knows he's better than the guy in front of him.
Absolutely. 100%.
And the guy in front of him knows he's better than him.
100%.
And I commend him for that.
I don't think, and that's why I asked that, because I don't think people are speaking enough about what he's doing. The way people were beating him down about when not wanting to come off the bench. Now he's accepted and he's playing well, and all of a sudden it's not even a story anymore.
That'd be my problem
when I speak of new media. That'd be my problem with media. It's like, that's bullshit. Like, this man was getting destroyed. I mean, destroyed by everybody, taking hits at his character, which I think he's a very high character individual. Getting destroyed. And then he does exactly what everyone says he needs to do, take on that role, playing as good as any six man in the NBA right now, and it's not a story. That's bullshit.
Yeah, 100%. Because he's a guy at one time, he couldn't even yawn on the bench.
Yes.
Now, you know how when you're on the bench, this happens to every player. And and what I realized when about 50 in the league, the yawning is from you needing oxygen. It's not from you being tired sometime. And so, you know, you're like, you're sitting on the bench, you're like, and you do. If he did that, it would have been all over. Russell Westbrook bored with the game. Like, no. If you keep a camera on, every NBA player has done that and does that all the time. You're playing 4 games in 5 nights. You need oxygen, and you're going to yawn. And the excitement and the energy of the arena makes you yawn. They like that happens. It's not only because you're tired, but he couldn't do it. And I commend him. It is bullshit.
I think what do you make of player driven media? I've gotten the media, Patrick Beverly, CJ McCollum. But a lot of guys are starting to do podcasts. A lot of guys are starting to do different things. What do you make of the player-driven media side? Obviously, you still have traditional media. But what do you make of the player-driven media movement that's been taking place over the last 2 years?
I don't know how you do it. I didn't have the mental fortitude to do what you do, honestly. Because I took things to heart. So when I used to go on talk radio and, you know, and I call in, they'd be like, hey, we want you to have you on. I'd be like, I'm not taking callers. Like, why? Because I don't want John from Indiana, who's sitting in his basement, to ask me a question and affects my psyche of the game, who has no idea. I'm like, you're supposed to be an expert. I like your show. I'll come on. You allow yourself to be open to guys who do not know basketball. Like, they have no clue. And you answer questions or answer their comments. I don't have thick enough skin. I'm not going to lie. It would affect me in a negative way to where it would affect my play. Like, for you, I don't know how you and CJ do it, because neither one of CJ is still getting 25, 30. Like, you doing it. I couldn't do that because I just felt that people just don't know enough.
I agree. I mean, people don't know. People don't know enough, and I speak on that all the time, just how everyone thinks they know basketball. Like, it baffles.
Yeah, but the question I have for you, Dre, is, like, my question is you, is why would you allow Miles Davis, Jay-Z, we are that of basketball. Absolutely. We are your most unique people in the world. Why? Jay-Z's not letting somebody come in his session and tell him how to rhyme. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, you're a rap fan, but you don't know cadence. You don't know how to get there. You don't know beats. You don't know the percussion, how it mixes. You have no clue. How do you do that every day and allow that to happen? I don't even do that at TNT. Like, how do you do that?
I think for me, number one is, I think for me, it's about what you get out of it, right? Like, for the most part, I get a laugh out of it. Like, I think, like, I what I take from it is different lessons of how dumb people are. I feel like it allows me to operate in my everyday life, because you are very dumb if you think you know basketball as well as me. If you know basketball as well as you know basketball. It shows me how dumb you are, because you think you can watch this maybe 2 games a day, or, you know, and no one really watched 2 games a day, but you think you can consume basketball the little amount that you do, and your understanding of what's going on is as good as my understanding. I feel like it helps me in a lot of different areas in life, because it gives me a perspective.
The thing is, like, which most people don't understand is, I don't care who's one of the greatest basketball fans. In 3 hours, you've consumed more basketball than they will in 3 months. Because you've gone to practice, you've watched film, you've watched the other team, you've watched your game, you've lifted, you've getting prepared. You're doing like 9 things consumed about basketball, and they're watching 1 game. So in 3 hours, you've done more than most people have done in 3 months. I can't talk to people like that. I just don't have the patience for that. I just don't. I could answer like a barbershop call, you know, LeBron or Jordan. But I'm not talking about, how do you think Draymond Green affects the team? No, we're not getting into that.
Facts. No, no doubt. Before we get out of here, man, I got one last question I want to ask you. And like I said, it's one that obviously affected me in my life. But you know, in the relationship that I still have with him, but also you hold a relationship with him as well. What do you make that here we are 11 years later, Mark Jackson took a franchise that had no success, goes to two straight playoffs, and gets fired. Now, you can make what you want of him getting fired. Everyone can. That's neither here nor there. He got fired. Teams move on. And quite frankly, it's hard to say they made the wrong decision. We win a championship the next year. Now, you can make the argument that, hey, they would have won if Mark was there next year too. All right, maybe you believe it, maybe you don't. Who cares? But what do you make of him not getting a job as an NBA head coach? It's been 11 years now. He's still not a head coach. Or, well, 9 since he's been out. So it's 9 years since he's been out. He's still not a head coach. And if I'm looking at this, I'm like, well, I watched him go with a young Steph Curry, young Klay Thompson, young Draymond Green. And if he did nothing else, he gave those guys confidence. Well, guess what? Half the teams in the league need someone who can go give their guys confidence, who can show them the way. Young guys, you look at all these teams, super young guys, and he hasn't gotten that opportunity. What do you make of that?
I just think that there were facts that were lied upon, and there were lies that now became facts. So there's the message of now each year the lie gets bigger and the facts get smaller. So there are lies about Mark Jackson right now that I hear, and they go, yo, hey, your boy did this and what? Your boy said that. And I'm like, no, that's a lie. I speak to the dude every day. Like, I speak to Mark at least once a week. Like, no, like, Mark doesn't think like that. He didn't say, oh, he didn't do that. Oh, this was a fact. And then it gets lied on. So now as an owner or general manager, they're hearing the lies and they're not doing the research to find the truth. Because the truth would say exactly what you said. Are there coaches that have done things that you would say, man, why'd you do it that way? Of course, every coach. You probably could do that with Steve. But then when you add lies to it, there's no one to defend the lie. And that's the problem. There's no one there to defend the lie on his behalf. And Mark is choosing not to defend the lie. And I would defend the lie all day. I'd be on, you see me on every stage. I'm like, yo, he's lying. He did this. And this is actually what happened. And so, mm-hmm. But in terms of coaching and basketball knowledge and seeing what I saw him got out of you and Steph Curry, before he got there, did not play in the fourth quarters of games. They used to play Monte Ellis, and they would say Steph could not play in the fourth quarters because defensively he could not handle that. I used to watch the Golden State Warriors, and they used to say that. And he was going to be traded.
Yeah, no, he was like, definitely going to be traded.
He was going to be traded until Mark Jackson got there. He saved not only the franchise, he saved the league. Like, you think if Steph Curry is not... He saved basketball by making this dude what he is and allowing him to be who he was. He saved basketball and changed the culture of the way we play today based on the way Steph plays. But someone had the vision to allow that to happen. He was the vision. He was not doing that before he got there. Neither were you. There was no undersized power forwards doing what you do. Klay Thompson didn't have the free reign they do. It's a travesty that he's not coaching basketball.
I agree. I know what he did. I always tell people, you can look around the league. You have coaches that give guys confidence, and you have coaches that takes confidence. Mm-hmm. And he is somebody that gave us, if nothing else, the ultimate confidence. Everybody thought he was crazy.
I don't know if you
crazy.
Remember this. Check this out. I came to you guys' game, and he brought me in the locker room, right?
Absolutely, I definitely
when he was coaching. And he's speaking to the team, and he goes, Kenny, I just want you to see the team that's going to be standing in the White House.
Mm-hmm. I definitely remember that.
And here y'all are, the other last week, again, standing in the White House.
yesterday.
I said, Mark, when you gave that prophecy, you should have said, standing in the White House with me. You didn't add me to it. That's why it's still happening. You didn't add the me. Because when he said it, I walked out of here and I was like, these dudes ain't going to no NBA final. I honestly said that in my mind. I'm like, these dudes, Clay and Steph don't shoot like that. This dude Draymond don't defend like that. All this stuff he's telling me, I'm like, and here we are. Five championships later.
I remember he said, and everybody went crazy, and he said, I have the greatest shooting backcourt of all time. Everybody like, why would he say that? Blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no, I'm telling you, I got the greatest shooting backcourt of all time. For someone to say that,
if somebody went on TV, body of work to prove that.
Not at all. Right, if someone did that now, just in a TV position, and said this is going to be the greatest backcourt of all time, then four years later, you're looking at it and you're like, wow, they have a job like that just by saying it on TV.
Just by saying it on TV, 100%.
It's actually 100%. Coaching that. Coaching that. So. Nah, man. You know, I got mad love for Coach Mark Jackson.
Yes,
that's my first coach in this league. But my brother, I appreciate you for coming on the show.
Man, this was fun,
hour
man.
Hour and 20 minutes, bro.
I love basketball, man. We can do this again.
I appreciate you.
All right, we
most definitely will.
All right. I appreciate you, brother.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
So, should we go electric?
I think we should go electrified with Toyota.
Electrified?
Electrified means options. Yes, we could go all electric with a Toyota bZ4X, but then there are hybrids like Grand Highlander. Or we could do something in between like a RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
So, Toyota is electrified, diversified?
Yep, and with more options for reducing carbon emissions, the closer we all get to Toyota's Beyond Zero vision for the future.
Exactly how much coffee have you had this morning?
Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.